Hello and welcome to Books on the Go, a podcast where we talk about our book of the week. I'm Anna Bailey Karras and I'm here with Annie Waters. Hi, Annie.
Hello.
And this week we've been reading The Master and Margarita by Mikhail Bulgakov, translated by Michael Glennie. A classic.
Mm.
This is our last episode that we're recording for the year, but it could be uploaded in January, so we could be saying Happy New Year. Depending on when we upload it, it could be the last book of 2022 or the first book of 2023. But first, we don't have any book news. So first we're doing our Keep or Cull segment, which, as you know, if you've been listening, I'm only reading my TBR shelf at the moment. I'm not buying any books.
Which is actually what has prompted us to read this, because this has been sitting there for the longest time, isn't that right?
It has. Master and Margarita has been on my shelf for 11 years.
Wow.
We worked out.
Congratulations. So I feel like I should have brought some champagne or something. Vodka, probably.
So we're really ticking this off the list. And going through the shelf, we've introduced our Keep or Cull segment, where we're just getting these books done one way or the other, mm-hmm. and just making a decision. So Annie, you've been reading your shelf as well. Tell us what you've
yes.
had lately.
Well, I this year have joined a Virginia Woolf book club, and we're reading all of her novels to start with, and then we'll read her nonfiction in chronological order. So we were up to Jacob's Room, and this got given to me several years ago as a Christmas present and has been sitting on the shelf ever since. And I was like, great, this is an excuse to get out Jacob's Room. And it's the best of the novels that we've read so far, but her early novels are really hard work. So this one at least feels like she's experimenting with form and was more enjoyable to talk about, but the reading of it, it's quite slim, but it did take quite a while
wow.
to get through.
I haven't read that one.
Yeah, not many people.
Yeah.
There's a lot of interesting themes, and you can definitely see where she's going as a writer, and I think that's what I'm excited about for us to talk about as a group. You know, if it's the kind of novel that I would have picked up and then probably put down after about 20 pages if I wasn't reading it for this group that I'm in. So I'm glad that I finished it. I'm glad that we had a really fruitful discussion, and we're all looking forward to The Lighthouse next month.
Oh, yes. Or To the Lighthouse is fabulous. Mm. And did Jacob's Room, was it well received in the time?
I'm not sure. There's lots of themes about, it's about a young man who goes off to war basically, and based on her brother who died in the First World War. So it's lots of themes of kind of the loss of that generation of young men and the freedom and independence that they had before the war. I don't actually know what its critical reception was in the time. It'd be interesting to look up.
It must have been positive enough in the sense she was then still publishing.
Well, I mean, she was publishing them herself.
That's
so
true.
It was very little,
so it didn't
you know,
matter.
No, exactly. That's how the first two slipped through.
Oh, Annie.
It's been very funny. We've been, done this club and everyone's kind of like, oh, I'm disliking Virginia Woolf with every book.
Wow. But she was self-publishing before her time.
Totally. Yeah. And look, doing really interesting things, and it would have been so experimental and so different to anything else that was being published at the time. So you can really respect that. Mm. And she's making it up as she goes along basically. So,
wow. Yeah. And so are you keeping Jacob's Room?
I think I'll keep it until the end of the book club. So I've got them all together, and then I'll think about which ones get to stay.
Yes, very good.
But it can
go
on the main shelf now, which is, you know, a relief.
Yeah, well done. So my Keep or Cull, I read this week Notes on an Execution by Danya Kukafka, which I loved.
Mm.
It was actually a slight exception to the TBR rule. It was a very recent addition to the TBR because we did it for the Adelaide Writers Week Book Club. So I did have to have it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was came in and came out of the shelf within
quickly.
The week.
Yeah.
But I really loved it. I don't know if that's the word, but this is a book. It was on a list earlier in the year. So I think I had actually recommended it for the Writers Week Book Club. And then I had misgivings because someone said at the last meeting, oh, I've started reading it and it's quite dark. And I thought, oh dear, what have I done? But it was then on the New York Times top 10 crime books of the year, and it could be classified as crime. It's not a classic crime novel. I think it straddles literary fiction and crime. Mm. So I'd had it recommended. So it's the story of three women who are caught in the orbit of a serial killer. His name is Ansel, and Ansel is on death row. So the way that she has structured it is you do hear from Ansel, and he is on the last day of his life. So he's, you hear from him in hourly segments. So 12 hours to go, 11 hours to go, 10 hours to go. So it's a countdown.
That's propulsive.
And he is, of course, still, he still has a few chances, you know, because they always do the last minute appeals. And he's also got a plan where he's hoping he might escape somehow because he's collaborated with someone. So there are a few plot points for him just in the immediate current day. But of course, he also looks back a little bit and has some memories that we get a bit of a picture of how he came to be there. But the other women we focus on are Lavender, who was his mother at 17 and had a difficult relationship. And then we also see his wife's sister. So his wife was Jenny, and Jenny has a twin, Hazel, and we actually see him through Hazel's eyes and the impact on Jenny. And the other one is Safi, who's the detective who has actually pursued him. But Safi also had grown up in the foster care system, as Ansel did. So that's a slight coincidence, I think you'd have to say. It's all, that's a bit coincidental, but that's the only plot point that I thought was sort of in this
plotty,
but the it's really propulsive and well written, and just a really interesting take on the serial killer sort of trope or story. And Dania Kukafka has spoken about that she didn't want it to be another straightforward. She'd grown up watching crime. She loved LA Law. She loved CSI. And but she kept thinking, why do we glorify these men, and why is it always centered on the men, and we make it sound as if they're so interesting and they're not that interesting. And I want to know about all the other people who are left behind. What about their stories? And that's why she's very deliberately made the women the focus of the book. And
that sounds great.
You get their story. So it and she's only 29, Dania Kukafka. So it's, oh my, I know. What are we doing with our lives, Annie?
Not going backwards.
But what was quite interesting, and it was a great book club book, because our discussion on Tuesday night was, you know, there were so many different opinions, and a lot of people who really couldn't put it down and read it quickly and loved it. And then a couple who, one who just said, I don't want to read about these serial killings. I'm not, you know, it's just not my genre for a couple. But what was interesting was we were talking a lot about Ansel and whether we felt sympathy for him, what we thought the, what was he? Was he a psychopath or what? You know, there was a lot of psychology behind it all. And we had someone in the room who knew a bit about that. So that was quite interesting. But it was fascinating, and we did comment on it, that we, why are we still talking about him when she really wants us to be talking about the women?
I guess because it's, I mean, it sounds like they're all talking about him too, you know, even if they're the focus or they're the narrators. He's still the protagonist, or he's still the focal point that connects all of them. So it's kind of...
So, yeah, it's interesting though. It's a little bit similar to reading The Silence of the Girls, but for me this was more satisfying, but where that was trying to make it all about the women, but actually you had Achilles out there fighting the war that you kind of want to hear about that. And that's sort of more, that's more dramatic, whichever way you look at it. And there was another one we did more recently, Marriage Portrait by Maggie O'Farrell, still with this very dramatic man on the outskirts that you still end up talking about.
Well, it's kind of like the Bechdel test, right? If the women aren't talking to each other and not about this man, then it kind of doesn't pass, even if that's the point.
Yeah. Yeah, so that
interesting.
Was, and then the question was, well, if she'd written the book about these three women and Ansel wasn't in it, or it wasn't, they hadn't had this serial killer in their life, would that have been an exciting book? But anyway, really successful either way, and I'd recommend it for a book club because it, you know, it generates a lot of discussion, a lot of issues about capital punishment. It's so much to talk about. So that was Notes on an Execution by Dania Kukafka.
Great.
Keeping that one.
Great.
Glad that was
to hear.
Good. Now on to our book of the week, The Master and Margarita by Mikhail Bulgakov, translated by Michael Glennie. And as we said, this has been on my shelf for 11 years, and I picked it up because it was recommended on the Sky Arts book show that Mariella Frostrup used to host, and she used to interview someone from a bookshop each week, and they would recommend a book for that would be good for book club. And someone just really sold me on this book, and I thought, I have to get it. It's a classic. And there it was sitting on the shelf thereafter. So it's a Russian classic, and it was written in the late 1920s, early 1930s, but only published in the 1960s. He had a lot of trouble with the Stalin regime and what could and couldn't be published, even though he was partly protected by Stalin. But it was translated, I think, in 1967 and 1968 and published around that time. And it certainly hit the culture.
Mm. Well, and wasn't it only published in Russia in a redacted version to start with? It was pretty heavily edited, I think.
Yes, I think that's right. But Mikhail Bulgakov was born in 1891 and he died quite young, 1940, and he lived in the Soviet Empire. So he was born in Kiev, but at that time that was part of the Russian Soviet Empire. He was a doctor, and including in World War I, but he also then became a writer and a playwright. He wrote about the Civil War, the Russian Civil War, that went from 1917 to 23, and that culminated in the formation of the Soviet Union. His father and grandfather were religious, which is quite interesting because there's some commentary on the Master and Margarita about, well, obviously there's heavy use of religion and religious motifs and characters, but also there might be that he was commenting on some of the elite in Russia at around the time he was writing were heavily promoting atheism, and there was a lot of atheist propaganda which he pushed back against. He loved Gogol. I don't know how to pronounce the names, I apologize. He loved Gogol, Pushkin, Dostoevsky, Dickens. So he read very widely in his time. His mother was educated and she was a teacher. And so he started writing, and he did write, I think, The Heart of a Dog before this one, but he just had so much trouble getting published. But he was also writing plays. His writing features satire. There's fantastical elements. There's grotesque elements. And he also does address ethical issues. So his life in the 1920s, Stalin banned his work. So he had a lot of trouble making a living from writing, but Stalin also protected him at different times as well, and went to see one of his plays, Days of Turbans, 5 times. So it was a very mixed experience by the sound of it. But in 1929, all of his work was censored. And then he ended up writing to Stalin to say, you know, either let me leave the country or please let me work, because, you know, I have to do one or the other. He remarried in 1932, and his third wife, Yelena, apparently inspired the character of Margarita in the novel. And so then we come to The Master and Margarita. So he was working on it from the late 1920s to early 1930s. And it's an absurdist satirical novel where the devil comes to Moscow. So we start off with two characters. One's a critic, one's a playwright, one's a poet.
A poet and his editor.
And one's the editor, that's right. And they're at Patriarch Ponds in Moscow, and this gentleman appears who seems to be a traveller, possibly German, and it's the devil. So the reader knows that it's the devil, and chaos on shoes basically in Moscow. But and the poet ends up sort of losing his mind. The devil moves into the editor's apartment with his sort of has an entourage, including a talking cat and an offsider and a woman who could be a witch or could be, we're not sure. And so he sort of moves into Moscow and starts causing havoc. And the other story that we follow is there's a writer who's living in Moscow, and he's writing the story of Pontius Pilate. And so we actually get that story at the same time. So it flips to Pontius Pilate, and he's the one who had to make the decision whether or not Jesus Christ would be crucified. And you see him, and it's a very, it really takes you there, doesn't it? He makes the characters so real, and, you know, he's really wrestling with the decision. And at one point he has a headache and he just thinks, let's just get on with it, I'll crucify him. But then he starts to sympathize with Jesus and he thinks, maybe we'll just let him go. I quite like him. He's healed my headache, you know. And then, but then there's too much evidence and he has to
And politicking.
And Jesus is portrayed, I think it's Yeshua in the story, and he's portrayed as quite naive and can only believe the good in people. But anyway, that's quite a compelling story in and of itself. And then we go back to Moscow with the present day. And so the writer, the master, is the writer of that novel or that story, and then he is in love with a woman called Margarita who's married but unhappily married, and they become caught up in the devil's scheming and planning, and the devil seems to have it in for all the literati and all the elite
of Moscow really interesting.
And the sort of establishment who, and they're all part of a club and they're very comfortable and they have these quite grand lives, and then there are all these there are a whole lot of people who are homeless or can't get an apartment, and there's a housing commission that's in charge of renting, and there's a huge queue at the door, but they can only give keys, you know, they can only give an apartment to 20 out of the 2,000. And so it's having a lot of fun, poking fun at bureaucracy and the establishment and the elite, but in a very absurdist way and fantastical way. So at one point someone's flying on a broomstick. I won't say too much more, but needless to say, there's a lot in this book, as there often is with a classic. What did you think, Annie?
I don't quite know what to think. I didn't know what to expect going in. I think just from the title alone and the cover of my edition, which is this beautiful in the vintage Russian classics edition, it's beautiful with red and black and white and green, kind of quite abstract illustrations, and I thought it was a love story. And so I was going in expecting, you know, a Tolstoy and Anna Karenina, a kind of a Dostoevsky, a big sprawling epic, which is what I'm used to reading from the Russians. And this just totally blindsided me. No, but I was amazed by what it is. So I must admit I'm only about halfway through. I haven't quite finished it yet because it is taking me longer than I expected. I think the other Russians that I've read, you kind of really sink into their prose and it's really comfortable and they really take you on a journey. It's really emotionally resonant.
More traditional.
Exactly, exactly.
Do you want to hear what the genre is according to Wikipedia? Fantasy, farce, supernatural, romance, satire, modernist literature.
Oh, that's exactly what I would have pegged it as. But yeah, so as I was reading it, I was being reminded of Angela Carter, of David Lynch, of Murakami. Just when you were talking now about Kurt Vonnegut and kind of he'd been in the war and that kind of absurdist reaction to war and violence, and that kind of it's the only way you can process the horrible things that you experience in war by having a laugh.
I thought that was one of the fun things too about reading this novel, which was written in the 30s but possibly only read for the first time in the 1960s by an English-speaking audience. But then you see, as you're saying, all the you see how it might have influenced.
And totally.
We might never know the extent of it, but all these people we've read since then, and we think, would they have done that if it hadn't been for The Master and Margarita?
Well, and also I got the sense that, you know, even writing around the same time as people like Kafka or someone like that, whether he was reading Kafka, I don't know, that there's obviously something in the air, that there's that kind of sensibility or a reaction to the result of the First World War and then the coming of the Second World War, that just had this mood or like a cultural consciousness that they were all kind of in the same water, even though they're in totally different situations. Also, I guess he and Kafka were dealing with similar kind of bureaucratic nightmares, and it's really a novel of the city. It totally takes you to Moscow and as you say, highlights the absurdities of all of those characters and the things that they care about. You know, when they go, the Satan, what's his name,
Woland
puts on a magic show at the kind of theater, and he showers the crowd in money and kind of induces all the women to give up their clothes and gives them new clothes, and then as soon as they get out the theatre, of course the new clothes disappear, so they're all naked on the street and screaming. But that there's also a section where one of the characters is having a dream where Woland is on stage and interviewing him and saying, give up your foreign currency. And it's not so much that he's accepted a bribe that is the problem. No one cares about the bribe. It's that he's accepted the bribe in foreign currency.
Yes.
That's the issue. And so it's just kind of like this bizarre of priorities.
It was interesting how they treated foreigners, because you had to be on a register
if you
wanted to come into Russia. And I'm just reading into it that was something based on, you know, reality. But It was, well, hang on, we haven't got any record of a German called Woland in Moscow, so he's not on the register, and then he can't be here, and then, of course, he disappears when they go to check, so then they think everyone's lying. But it's interesting, so when Bulgakov was living in Moscow at around that time, there would be knocks on the door in someone, you know, in someone else's apartment. They'd have a knock on the door at midnight and then that person would disappear.
Mm. And I noted that too, that, yeah, there's lots of just vanishings.
And
or
so there's vanishing in this, and it is, as you say, written in that absurd way.
But you can see the connections, but absolutely.
These were serious things that were happening. Mm. But I did think of Vonnegut as well, and that sense of when the government is behaving in a certain way and people are disappearing and there's no rule of law and in an arbitrary way you could be next and you don't know.
And when all your neighbours are spying on you and everyone's...
The neighbours are spying on you. There's a sense of if you don't laugh, you'll cry, because you almost have to see the comical side of it because it is so absurd, but you also can't speak about the horror of it because your mind just can't.
Well, and
there.
In this book, when the characters do speak about the events that have happened to them, they get put in the lunatic asylum because, you know, they're saying what's happened, and people are like, "Oh, you're crazy," and they're saying the truth. And you can imagine that too would have been something around the time where, you know, if you're writing something in the newspaper that you think is plainly obvious, and then the government's
gaslighting them.
Exactly, and saying, we're going to lock you up.
And he sort of takes it to the extreme, but things that are, you can really see where it's all come from. Mm. So, yes, I thought of Vonnegut as well and Murakami. Mm.
So, yeah, I'm really loving it, but it's a wild ride. I have no idea where we're going.
I know.
And just even the structure of it, I mean, you kind of don't meet the master until that middle section that I'm just kind of getting into now. And you wonder whether the master, if, as you say, the mistress is based on his wife, whether the master is then based on him, and perhaps he was wanting to write this book about Pontius Pilate and kind of reimagine that character as not wholly evil or kind of as a more nuanced character, and whether that got shut down by the government as a result. I'm not sure.
It could well be. Yeah. I haven't done a deep, deep dive into the background. I'll confess, and the book really does warrant that, but I'm sure so many people have done
it. There would be a lot of papers written on
it. In my edition, there was a great foreword or introduction by Will Self, which talked about what he liked about it, and I got this sense, maybe, well, because I'd read the introduction, he doesn't give you, and it's no, I won't give any spoilers, but he doesn't give you a sort of happy ending or anything like that, and he said it, and equally, it doesn't feel particularly angry in some ways, although you can see that it's driven by
intense emotion.
Mm. Will Self said it feels to him like the ending is more realistic, or the tone of the book is more realistic in the sense that if you lived in that time and that was your government, you would almost, as a matter of survival, just think, well, this is how it is. This is life. Mm. People behave this way. What are you going to do?
Mm.
You know, and almost shrug your shoulders and just say, well, it's so ridiculous. It might as well be someone's flying on a broomstick past the moon.
Yeah, sure. If you say that's happening, fine, that's happening. Fine. Yeah.
You know, it just has that tone rather than we're really angry. We're going to fix this, which, you know.
You kind of get past that.
Bulgakov's time wasn't.
Yeah, you
get
past that.
It wasn't the answer.
If joining together as a collection can't actually make a difference, you just kind of throw your hands up and think, okay, well, fine, I'll just go with the flow for a bit and see where it takes me. And you do, I guess, try and keep your head down and just survive. Yeah, I found it really fascinating. I loved the tone. It's so funny.
It's quite playful, isn't it?
It's really, bizarre. And, yeah, none of the characters kind of take themselves too seriously, or if they do, they really get their comeuppance. There's a lot of heads getting cut off. And
yeah, it's extreme.
It really
is. I did get that David Lynch vibe as well.
Yeah, it kept making me think of Mulholland Drive. Or I would love to see him make an adaptation of it.
I just wonder, I mean, do we assume that he read it and that fed into his creative
maybe, or that they're just kind of kindred ideas. Spirits, you know, that they have a similar kind of brain that sees the darkness in joy and the joy in darkness, or, you know, that kind of duality.
But even the stage, you know, the magic show and how he comes onto stage, and it made me think of some of the scenes in Twin Peaks where the giant, I can't even remember them now, but there's a red curtain and then someone comes on stage and they're not what you're expecting and everything's unusual and eccentric.
It's all heightened, and it's got that real kind of dark circusy kind of feel to it, you know, like a vaudeville or...
It's a really interesting book. I'm recommending it.
Yeah. I would love to go and do some further reading because that's what I kept thinking as well. I kept wondering whether the people that he was talking about, you know, the characters that he has, whether they related to specific people in his life or that Russians at the time would have recognized as characters from their world.
Yes.
And, you know, whether there were specific events that kind of would have had resonance in that time. I would love to read more about it as well as finishing the book.
Mm. Yeah, I thought it was excellent.
Yeah, great. Well, now you can tick Very it off good. Your Keep or Cull shelf as well.
We are. We're ticking that one off for sure. So that was The Master and Margarita by Mikhail Bulgakov, translated by Michael Glennie. And that's it from us. I don't know what we're doing next, Annie.
No, we're going to have a bit of a relax.
We're having a break, but you might be getting this during our break. Yes, we're going to have a bit of a holiday over Christmas, New Year. Mm. So we'll see you later in January.
Fantastic.
And you can follow us in the meantime on Facebook at Books on the Go and email us at booksonthegopodcast@gmail.com. And I'm on Instagram, Twitter and Litzy at A. Bailey Karras. And Annie?
I'm on Instagram, Twitter and Litzy at Mr_Annie. Let us know what you're excited about for 2023.
Yes, send us your lists. We'll see you then. Bye for now.